Now, let's move to the afternoon calendar, item 824.
Amend code to reflect changes to the organizational structure, positions, and responsibilities of the Office of Management and Finance.
And probably want to go ahead and read the other three items as well so that Fred and his team can talk about the whole package.
825, create a new non-represented classification of revenue and financial services director and establish a compensation rate for the new classification. 826, amend city administrative rules to reflect the transfer of program responsibility for Title II ADA and Title VI civil rights compliance programs from the Office of Management and Finance to the Office of Equity and Human Rights. And 827, adopt and amend the city comprehensive financial management policies and procedures.
Thank you. Well, some points of context. Again, this is a multi-month effort. These items represent some of the last steps in implementing the reorganization of the Office of Management and Finance. So what's before us today is amending code language, creating a new classification, amending our administrative rules. As the council remembers, we had Moss Adams conduct an organizational and operational assessment of OMF and looked at its structure and key positions with the advice of a really excellent Blue Ribbon Committee of folks from the private sector and from other large governmental organizations that were here to advise and guide that work. We had a Citizens Task Force working through that analysis with us, and they weighed in on the resulting report and the recommendations of the consultants. Some of these recommendations have already been put into place through the budget process and administratively, but as I said, the rest of these require council action. I understand we have an amended substitute document for 824, is that right? And that's here as amended Exhibit B. So we need a motion to enter that version into the record.
So moved.
Second.
And a council roll call on putting the substitute on the table.
Could the staff just tell briefly what's in it?
You want to walk us through what's the difference in the, amended? Two,
we added a word on the amended one. One of the commissioners requests that the new director of revenue and finance would not only give information but advice.
And as well as CEO.
That was one of the changes.
And parallel structure to the language of the CAO, serving all of council and providing not only information, but the additional words and advice to elected officials.
Right. And then down in 315.050.
Adding the word equity
to
the range of BHR functions.
So those were clarification changes, mm-hmm. those additions or changes. So roll call on putting the substitute before the council.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
So the reason that I asked for the words and advice to be added to the charge of the Chief Financial Officer, the Revenue Bureau Director, is that I want it to be very clearly understood that, like the Budget Director, that person has the responsibility to go give advice to the Council rather than waiting for us to ask the right question, which would be more the information giving. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Thank you. So, Director Miller.
Thank you, Fred Miller from OMF, with Celia Heron, who actually has answers to your questions if you have any. But I'm hoping that you don't have too many, because we're really implementing decisions that you've already made and discussed. So I'm going to go through fairly rapidly and then see if there's anything you want to slow down on. But there may be more discussion of item number 4, which relates to the city financial management policies. And at that time, Andrew will come up and, along with Celia, respond to your questions. So the first item relates to the change in the code language relating to OMF, and it basically creates this new Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services, broadly states the responsibilities of the director of that bureau. As you're aware, transfers some regulatory programs to PBOT, and then moves EBS to BTS, if you're with me on the acronyms. So that is something that is just necessary to implement the organizational changes that are in the budget and you have already discussed. And assuming there are no questions there, moving to the next one, Basically, what you need to do today is approve a new classification of Revenue and Financial Services Director and the compensation rate. There's more work to do as we announce that position and more discussion we can have, but this is just saying, yes, the classification is approved and the pay rate. And the third item is, again, something that you've already looked at. We've moved the Title II and Title VI programs to the Bureau of Equity, and the changes basically transfer them and then authorize the OEHR director to implement the existing administrative rules. And again, I think that's not controversial.
Okay. Questions for Fred or Celia?
I have a couple of questions, and I just noticed in the 1315040A, it refers to the Office of Community Technology. It's actually the Office for Community Technology. So we need to make that a Scrivener's error. But the reason I was drawn to that was because the person who's in charge of the Office for Community Technology is a manager, but then under E here, we've got the Revenue Division shall be supervised by a director who shall report to the BRFS director. And we had some conversation about that awkwardness of, is the director a director? Is the revenue director still a director? Or what's the, how are you framing that?
We took the approach in making these code changes to make a minimalist approach. We recognize that a number of the organizations described in code under OMF lack parallel structure, and the issue of taking the Revenue Bureau and now creating a Revenue Division did raise that question of, is that position still a director or not? That needs to be resolved, but we figured we would do the organizational changes in code that have to be addressed, and then we could look at the HR issues of, can a director report to a director? That said, we also would not be surprised if the new director of this bureau comes in and looks at the organizational structure and may suggest other changes. So we didn't want to presume to make those changes until that person was on board.
Do I have in my packet an organizational chart?
No, you do not.
So maybe that would be helpful before the vote next week if you could just lay out under the new OMF who's where.
The vote next week?
Are we voting next week?
This gets code changes, right? Two of these are today, and then the administrative rules is next week.
The code changes are emergency ordinances?
Yes.
Right.
But we can definitely get you an org chart.
Why are we making them as emergency ordinances?
We were hoping to get the code change so that when the recruitment goes out for the new position, any person looking online to see what the code is that describes the position and duties is up to date with what Council has directed.
Other questions?
Fred, I'll ask you a question because we've been having a lot of discussions in our office. In fact, we're going to charge you rent for all the time you're spending there. And one of the issues we've been debating is the significance of having a CPA credential for the person will be functioning as the CFO. And why don't you just, again, state your view on that and why you think we've hit the right balance in the recruitment?
Well, this job is designed to be larger than what used to be in the city as a CFO and has some high-level responsibilities and lots of communication with both the CAO and CBO as well as with the council. And we've listed the requirements for that job. My personal reaction is we don't need preference to particular educational achievements if we're trying to get the best people in the hunt. And I think we will get some good people. My reaction is we don't have to narrow that.
And let me try and put it in my words to make sure I understand. So you don't want to limit the pool unnecessarily. That's
correct.
One of the concerns you had.
Correct.
But we're also hoping to have a robust pool from which we could pick the most qualified person, and that person might actually have credentials above the minimum.
Sure.
The second question I wanted to ask you is we're creating an interesting hybrid here, and a lot of what we're doing is a result of compromise and thoughtful discussions that we've had between the second floor and the third floor. So this person, once they're in place, is going to have to balance three important relationships: a relationship with you, a relationship with the mayor, and a relationship with the council as a whole. We've struck a delicate balance here, but we've done it deliberately. So do you see any risk that the council will not be receiving that kind of unvarnished advice that we're seeking, even if occasionally it means respectfully disagreeing with either the mayor or the CAO?
Commissioner, great question, and I don't see the problem. I think if you look at existing operations, the mayor has told me that I'm responsive to all of you and has never given me any instructions not to share information or advice or whatever. And I think that Andrew's position as far as CBO works fine. I mean, there's a model there where I think people do respond directly, give advice, and hopefully say dumb idea when necessary.
Yeah, and we're deliberately encouraging that kind of independence.
That's
we're
right.
Not trying to create a culture of insubordination. But I think your example of the Independent Budget Office is a good one. And Andrew is a frequent visitor of my office disagreeing with things that I care about, because his job is actually to give his professional opinion, not to curry favor. And the difference is he's wholly outside of OMF. Here we've agreed to do it within the OMF framework.
Correct.
But again, and my confidence in this has a lot to do with the conversations we've had and your commitment to this approach. But you see no structural impediment to getting the same kind of independence as the council seeking from this position that we have with Andrew, who operates wholly outside of OMF.
Yeah, I see no reason why there should be. I mean,
it depends on the person we hire.
It does, and that's one thing I would look for, actually, in that job, is someone who can handle ambiguity, because if one's locked into an existing structure and has to worry about talking to someone before talking to you, I think we've made a mistake. I mean, I would think there would be a very free flow of conversation.
I appreciate that.
Okay.
Other questions? And then do we have anybody signed up on the first three items? Again, we'll take the 827 last because Andrew Scott needs to come up and discuss that. But anyone signed up on 824, 825, or 826?
I had one sign-up sheet for all, and no one has signed up.
Okay. Mayor, I'd like to ask questions of Dante.
Sure.
James, if I may.
Sure. Dante, why don't you come up and join colleagues up here, please.
Noon, Council.
So I know since we worked on it quite some time ago that you are supportive of the changes to Title II and Title VI. I just wanted to verify that that's still the case.
Yes, absolutely. I appreciate the work OMF did in putting this language together and transferring this over to the office. Just as an FYI, we will be coming back probably within the next 30 to 45 days with some additional administrative rules as it relates to Title II and Title VI, specifically how to request an exemption to the ADA requirements and things of that nature. And it was decided that it was best not to just transfer authority from OMF to my office, but bring it back to Council for an understanding of that's what we're asking for in terms of my office's ability to create administrative rules. And get the approval of Council to do that.
Right. Celia, is this the time that I bring up the administrative rules? Thank you for reminding me of that. One of the issues with moving parts of the Revenue Bureau to transportation is that currently administrative rules on things like taxicabs are in OMF, and as Mr. Miller pointed out, he was very responsive to all of us. If they go into a particular bureau, then there's maybe less opportunity for other council members to be aware of changes in administrative rules. And although there's a public process in all the administrative rules, currently the council doesn't necessarily get notified of administrative rules in another bureau other than OMF. So I believe that we should just establish and maybe ask Celia, I'm asking Celia to come back with a resolution to require that when administrative rules are being considered in any bureau, that council is copied as well as the public so that we have the opportunity to review them. And similarly, that any bureau that doesn't currently have the opportunity to create its own administrative rules be given that that ability. It's no coincidence that in both the Office of Equity and Human Rights and in the City Budget Office, which my office was instrumental in creating, neither of those was given that capacity. And although, as a practical matter, most of the time both of those bureaus will want to come back to Council for approval of the administrative rules, it seems sensible to make it the same across the board.
Thank you. I think it's important, certainly as we engage in with the public much more as it relates to compliance issues regarding civil rights actions, that we have the ability to do that.
I'm seeing nods from my
Makes sense to me.
Thank you. And then the other just minor detail, well, not minor detail, important detail that I wanted to check with you was regarding inserting the word equity into part of the charge for the Bureau of Human Resources, and wanted your comments on that.
No, well, certainly I appreciate any bureau taking the responsibility to address equity within in their charge and their responsibilities. I guess I would offer just a suggestion in terms of the language specifically, given what HR specifically does. And if I could just read it real quickly, my suggestion would be in terms of specifically just using the words diversity and equity and outreach, et cetera, but that its that its role is to promote and ensure diversity and equity in outreach, employment, and recruitment services. I think that would make it a little bit cleaner about what HR's role specifically is and what they will be tasked with doing, since that is, in some sense, their responsibility is to ensure that outreach and that the promotional and employment opportunities are done from an equitable perspective.
Okay, I'm not. While we hear the other testimony, you and Celia could work on a proposed amendment to that section. It's section 315.050A.
Okay. I think I'm adding two words, so that's kind of what it is, but I'm getting those looks. Thank you, Celia.
I'm trying to focus on
okay,
you.
Okay, that's what it was. I understand. But no, I'm happy to do that. So
thank you.
Yeah, it's just a construction issue in this section. There's a long list of tasks.
Right.
For BHR, for Bureau of Human Resources. So
it just sounds like a friendly amendment, Mayor.
Yeah, it is.
It is a friendly amendment, but actually I do need to put it on the table so that folks can testify on it if you want to vote on this all today.
Yep.
So can you tell me what the amendment is that I need to move?
Okay.
Tell me what I want to say here.
What you want to say is...
I don't know where it is on what you're looking at.
Sure. Oh, let's go one more page. That's BRFS. Excuse us, Brad. So she added.
Oh, here it is. So right here. So yeah. It would be to promote and ensure diversity.
No one has actually signed up for
that. Yeah.
It's a parallel thing. We might need to add it.
I'll give them a moment to see if they can do this.
Somebody might
be
furious with my amendment.
Mr. Miller, while they're working that out, can I just ask you a question?
Let me call it.
Because we're going to go right to a vote. The last thing I wanted to ask you, Mr. Miller, is tell us again what the council's role is going to be in the recruitment process.
I don't know that it's formally done, but my discussions on the recruitment would be, let's say we get 25 applications. We have someone screen that, and I think it's someone beyond just an HR screening, and get that to, and I'll make up the number, something like 10, and then I would assume that representatives from council offices will be involved at that level. And then I would think that out of that, there would be recommendations to me for one, two, or three people to talk to. So the council will be involved at that stage.
And then the mayor will bring forth a name to the council.
That's the way it works. I'll give him one.
But there'll be that intermediate step would be a chance.
Yeah, I would like to invite other council offices to
be
involved somebody
in
for that.
No, that's
process.
Anticipated.
This position, although it reports to the CAO, does need to serve the whole council, which is the whole point of that language. Okay, so did we manage to do rapid statutory construction?
Absolutely. Just in time code writing.
Just in time code writing by Celia Herron. She's done this before.
Anna Canwett is not here. I'm trying to channel her. If you're looking at the phrase, it starts... human resources system for the city, including labor relations and negotiations, promoting diversity and equity in outreach, employment, and recruitment services.
Okay.
Blah, blah, blah.
So I move that revised language.
Mm-hmm.
Any further discussion on that? So let's take a roll call on substituting that language.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Celia and Dante. Aye. Okay, so we have no one signed up to testify, I believe, on this package of items. Does anyone else here that wants to? Okay, so then we will thank this team for good work, and we'll take a roll call on 824 and 825, and then 826 will pass the second reading. Okay.
824, Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
This is the whimper at the end of a very long and tumultuous discussion, so I'm pleased that apparently the community either gave up at the end of the process or is satisfied with the outcome. I am satisfied with the outcome, and I'm appreciative of all of the discussion that's gone to get here. Aye.
Fish?
Well, Commissioner Fritz, I have a slightly different take on that, which is we've been collectively working on this for a year, and in the best tradition of this body, working out compromises to get to a place where we can all unanimously support this approach. And I just want to acknowledge that there's been lots of twists and turns in this discussion, and different views passionately held by members of council about what the right outcome was. But in my mind, we do our best work when at the end we come together around a shared vision of how to move forward. So from my point of view, when we drafted an ordinance that set forth an initial vision for the CFO, we have compromised on several key cornerstone things based on conversations with the mayor and with Fred Miller and others, and a view of a sort of sharing alternative visions, and ultimately understanding that we had the same goal, but we had a different approach of how to get there. I think that's how we do our best work, and it took perhaps a little longer. Thanks very much to the outside group of experts who came in and gave us a roadmap. But I just want to acknowledge that while this particular vote seems anticlimactic because we don't have a room full of people testifying and we're not going to have a lengthy discussion, it's been the hard work that's gone into getting us here got us to a point where this council together feels comfortable moving forward, and I think we're about to do something which is vitally important to the long-term health, financial health of our city. And so I want to thank everyone who's brought us to this moment, the mayor, my colleagues, Fred Miller. And Fred has an interesting way of persuading people like me. He first tries the diplomacy and the charm and all that. Then he comes in with a folder. No, but Fred, we appreciate the time you've spent. And because Fred occupies a independent position, Fred is never shy about fundamentally disagreeing with our view on things. Through that comes a better understanding of how to get to the same place, sometimes through a different route. And again, I think that's how we do our best work. So I want to acknowledge that, thank everybody, and I am pleased to vote aye.
Hales.
Well, this is a great piece of work. And Fred, thank you for all the effort you've put into it. And again, we had some great outside counsel in the form of people that really understand big organizations. And I think it was a classic case of really pulling in that expertise, having somebody in-house who we really trust and rely on as an experienced public administrator, and then the council working together to come up with a good set of solutions. So I'm really happy about this whole body of work, and this is kind of the last piece of it, but very important. Aye. Okay, and roll call on 825, please.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
I'm relieved and pleased that the City of Portland will have a Chief Financial Officer, Revenue and Finances Services Director in the near future. I think that the Bureau has had challenges, and certainly that this will be a good addition both to the accounting and the budget process in partnership with the Budget Office. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. And then 826 passes to second reading. And then did you read 827 earlier?
I did read the title,
okay,
yes.
Okay, so now we have Andrew Scott here, and again, assisted by Celia for last-minute amendments because we have some.
That's true. So very briefly, the city's financial management policies are a compilation of about a dozen different policies. As you know, the city's enjoyed over 30 years of a AAA bond rating, and I think in some part because of the sound financial management we have, these policies being an element of them. That said, they were well overdue for a look at and a revision. And so we've got everything from budgeting to financial planning, reporting, debt management, et cetera. Over the last year, Office of Management and Finance and the City Budget Office have worked together, because when we were all in OMF, that was the joint responsibility. Now we've sort of said, Andrew, these are the CBOs to manage, and these are ours. And in a couple of places, we have joint custody. So we've worked together. We also vetted them broadly, our proposed edits. We took input from city staff, financial staff, bureau directors, et cetera. And I think if our comments, their comments were either integrated or at least we've cleared away the confusion. So it's been a good process. Very briefly, I'm going to speak to the OMF set of CFMPs, the financial policies, and Andrew will talk briefly about a couple on in his portfolio. And really, most of the changes to the policies on the OMF side were really just shoring up best practices, updating technology. We have an electronic payment processing policy, and guess what? 8 years ago, it looked a lot different than best practices in the technology that we have now. We clarified some roles and responsibilities regarding to cash management and clarified the responsibilities of bureaus to ensure the city's cash condition. I think maybe more important is the overview. We updated the overview of all the policies. We divided up the responsibilities, but we also added a point that said this council and city bureaus can seek clarification and request amendments or changes to these policies. Now, maybe you don't have to say it, but what we found in the process of opening up the policies and having bureaus look at it was an excellent learning experience for everyone. So the destination is not the only goal. The process of opening them up and looking at them and getting bureaus to really understand what's there is invaluable, and I think we'll see that played forward as we move through the accounting rules. There's two new policies. One is a pension funding policy, which on the surface isn't particularly dramatic. It sort of says we're going to pay what PERS tells us to pay, and we're going to pay FPDR. But it was in response to some changes in governmental accounting standards, where we're going to be looking at very different kind of bottom line in terms of what the city owes in pension liabilities. And so best practices indicated you really want to establish a pension funding policy so outsiders can see what the city is committed to covering, what they aren't. That's about as wonky as I'll get unless you have questions.
Okay, thank you. Questions? Andrew.
So, Andrew Scott, City Budget Director. And again, Celia explained sort of the process we've gone through, and given that vetting, I'll be very brief. But I did just want to touch on three specific things in here that I think are worth putting on the table during sort of the public conversation about this after this vetting process that we've just gone through. One of them has to do with some of the changes in Financial Policy 2.07. This is the city's reserve policy. And again, this is an extremely important policy, and as most of you know, we reserve 10% of the general fund. But we looked at that as part of this review process, and we wanted to make just a couple of updates. And the biggest update in there is actually to create some new triggers. And as you may recall, our reserve policy, first, there's a primary trigger, which is that revenue growth needs to fall below 3%, either for prior two consecutive quarters or prospectively if it's in the forecast. That's sort of the primary trigger that needs to be met. In addition, one of three triggers needed to be met for council, again, to sort of be able to access that reserve. And I would remind you, we haven't ever accessed that reserve since it was created, but it does provide a cushion and a safety net in some really extreme circumstances if we were to need it. But when we looked at those triggers, they were out of date. And so we really wanted to make some more relevant triggers to things that impact the city. And specifically, we wanted to create triggers that capture the transitions, because some of those, the old triggers were levels of unemployment and levels of property tax delinquency, and they didn't necessarily capture the transitions, which is really the most important thing when you're looking at a negative fiscal situation. And the other, we also wanted to tie those triggers more closely to the city's revenue stream. So the three new triggers that we've come up with, the first one is that local housing prices would need to fall by more than 10% at any time during a two-year period. The second is that year-over-year change in the unemployment rate for the city of Portland rises by more than 2 percentage points at any time in 1 year. So again, instead of saying it has to be above a certain level, saying it has to rise by 2 percentage points within a 12-month period. And the final one is that year-over-year metro area employment, if it falls by at least 2% at any time during a 12-month period. Those are the three triggers proposed. And I do I do have one amendment. We found one, even though it has gone through at least a dozen or more reviews, There is a typo that we'd like to correct. The third trigger, as it currently reads, is year-over-year growth in metro area employment, and really that's intended to just be year-over-year metro area employment in total. So
removing the words growth and...
Growth in, right. So it just becomes year-over-year metro area employment. So council's amenable
to that. I'll move that amendment.
Second.
And any discussion about putting that amendment on the table? Then roll call on that, please.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, that's corrected.
Andrew, just one question. So the city has a AAA credit rating. People are always surprised to hear the Water Bureau has a AAA credit rating. But what we know from that is it means third-party rating agencies say that we run our do our business in a prudent way, setting aside proper reserves, raising revenue with necessary, making investments. The thing we often get asked, particularly during the down cycles, is why aren't we rating that money and investing in worthy causes? Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons is we don't want to jeopardize our credit rating. And in three sentences, could you just identify what the things that you'd be most concerned about losing if our credit rating was ever downgraded? What the implication for the city is?
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, and this is more a question for our debt and treasury department, but it would have significant cost impacts on the city. All of our borrowing would become more expensive. So really a very significant impact to lose that credit rating. I mean, and I would say, Commissioner, in terms of using those reserves, that's right. One of the major concerns is making sure we don't lose that AAA credit rating. You know, another issue with those reserves, when you're talking about economic downturns, and we learned this now, it's part of the Great Recession, and actually, you know, some national groups, government finance officers and others, are really looking at that historical experience. Cities that use their reserves didn't end up any better, and in many cases ended up worse than cities that didn't. And the reason for that is when you're looking at a systemic downturn, it's really important to get out ahead of that and make the necessary reductions, because you don't know when that recession is going to end. If you could forecast the recession will end in 10 months and revenues will pick back up, well, that's a great time to go ahead and bridge that with one-time funds. But we never know, and in fact, in 2008, we were thinking, well, maybe it would last a year. Well, it ended up lasting significantly longer in terms of our revenue impact. So those reserves are actually much more useful for natural disasters and emergencies, which, again, half of our reserve is set aside for. And those economic downturns, we need to just be really careful about when we tap
if
those.
I could, Andrew, let me just use a homey metaphor. Many of us go in and seek financing for a car or for a mortgage. And one of the most more important pieces of information that banks consider when they think about extending you credit is what your credit score is. And the lower your score, the higher the interest rate they'll charge you. They'll give you the money, but they'll make you pay more for it if you're seen as a risk. And that's sort of a hidden tax. If we jeopardize our credit rating because we're using money in a that we should hold aside, then it's going to end up costing us more to do all the borrowing we do, and it ends up coming back and hurting the very people we're trying to serve. So thank God it looks like we're heading into a better cycle, but I think it's good to remind people that there is a consequence to raiding that money, and it could come at the cost of our stellar credit rating.
So the second policy I just wanted to draw your attention to is 2.03. And again, there are a number of things in here, most of which are minor. But this is actually where we also deal with operations and maintenance, and particularly O&M for new assets that are coming online. And so one of the things, what we've tried to do in terms of updating this policy is really to clarify and hopefully simplify the process by which bureaus can request and receive O&M for new assets. And we've had some conversations on council over the last year about this. And really what these changes are intended to do is make sure that a funding plan is in place for the maintenance of new assets, and that bureaus that do require new general fund resources when they're bringing on a new asset, whether it's a park or some other asset, that they have some certainty that the resources are going to be allocated once that asset goes into service, and that council has clarity on what the cumulative out-year impact is of their asset decisions. So very briefly, the changes here. Every year, bureaus are going to be asked as part of their five-year CIP to estimate what the O&M is for everything that's in that CIP. And as you may know with your bureaus, a lot of the things in the out years are not things that will necessarily happen. They may be aspirational. But even those aspirational ideas, you know, we'd like the bureau just to do a rough estimate. And we understand it'll be a low-confidence estimate to say, if we were to get this investment and move forward, this is a rough estimate of what the O&M might be. What we then are also asking is that is that Cal target changes, instead of being on sort of a one-off basis, will be done as part of the budget process, and we'll do those prospectively. So everything that a bureau expects to contract for in the upcoming year, as part of the budget process, they'll bring a decision package that says, okay, we're expecting to go forward with 4 new parks, and we think the O&M on each one is $25,000, and thus we're bringing forward a decision package for $100,000. And council gets to then consider that as part of the budget process, and prospectively then give parks the certainty to say, yes, we agree that you should move forward with this, and we're going to build that into the forecast and into your budget. And we can then offset that on a one-time basis, depending on how long it takes. I mean, it may take a year, it may take 3 years for those parks to come online. But we know with certainty that that's in the forecast and that it's in the budget and that the money's available and at that time.
So, Andrew, it sounds like a laudable goal, but we also know from the last 3 or 4 years we've had big disagreements about what the O&M number ultimately should be. Bureau comes up with a number. You guys, you've often scrubbed it,
right?
And then you sort of look at assumptions. So I'm concerned here that we want to set clear public expectations. Mayor the other day, I thought, made a great comment that perhaps some of the estimates our engineers are making about high confidence estimates about the cost of construction need to be revised in light of the fact that we have a robust economy and bids are coming in well above what we're estimating because there's a capacity problem in the system. So people are saying, yeah, we'll do your work, but we're going to charge you more for it, contrary to what happened during the recession when we got great bids because people were lucky, were glad to have the work. So without wanting to sound snarky about this, how do we keep the politics out of the setting of the O&M, and what will be the role of the Bureau and your office in coming up with a number?
So we've actually built into the procedures, the proposed procedures, a true-up process once the facility is actually online. So you could imagine, you know, parks coming in with a low confidence estimate early on in the process and saying, well, we think it'll be $25,000. And council says, great, move forward with that. You know, we'll make sure that money's available. They'll come back with their contract. At the end of that process, through a number of changes, you know, maybe council's added some additional things to the park or some, you know, asked for some additional programming or other things, and the O&M ends up being $50,000, we would have a true-up process where parks would be able to essentially true that up. The same would go the other way. To the extent that they estimated something and the actual O&M ended up being lower, we would, again, as part of that review process later, be able to go back in and say, okay, it wasn't really $25,000, it was really $20,000 a year, so we're gonna true that up as well.
And just remind me, as I think Dan was the author of the ordinance, capital spending in parks the only area where we by ordinance require that the O&M be set aside?
No, and this policy applies to all bureaus. Parks is the
currently.
Yeah, it currently applies to all bureaus and will continue. I'm using parks as an example because they're the most frequent user of this. But as actually I think Commissioner Fritz has pointed out, there are some other examples of other bureaus that didn't. You know, actually, as part of bringing a new asset online, either consider the O&M or they didn't get an increase for it. And we want to make sure that consistently bureaus are both estimating what that O&M is and then making sure that the resources are available if council wants to move forward so that we're not stuck with some of the examples we currently have of that lack of O&M. So it does apply to all, and I should say it applies to all bureaus to estimate the O&M. The policy is focused on the general fund. Additional general fund needs, because of course non-general fund bureaus would fund it within their own resources.
It's just foreshadowing. I hope this doesn't lead to endless debates about O&M in order to get to council members being comfortable about voting for the CIP package, that whatever number you give us just for the purpose of our debate discussion becomes the placeholder number. Because I think what we understand is that one or more council members may not support a CIP investment because it comes with an O&M they don't think we can afford right now. So I think it's just really important that whatever the O&M number that comes to us doesn't become a debating point. It is, this is what we estimate, and if someone wants to vote against that capital expenditure because they don't think we should incur the O&M, it should be based on the number that you give to us.
And I see this revised policy as helping in that, and that the question is asked up front. Are you going to fund it, rather than at the end when we've already got the facility done? I would ask, in the utility bureaus, would the projection of the O&M be part of their capital investment list?
And yes, so, yes. And those bureaus, I mean, they already do this, but again, they would be expected to under this policy.
It might be helpful to make sure that it's teased out for the Budget Advisory Committee before they approve the CIP to make sure that the Citizen Advisory Committee understands, just like the council would understand, that there will be a cost to bringing a particular, you know, wastewater treatment plant or whatever it might be online, and that the Budget Advisory Committee is also buying into, yes, we're willing to raise the rates to do that.
Well, I'm not sure if I followed your question, Commissioner Fish, or if the language captures the difference, but this does apply to all bureaus. There are capital facilities that we elect to build where the operating cost is variable, or more variable than others. That is, we build a new community center or a new pool, depending on the hours and the rates charged, it has an O&M cost that moves around.
Right.
Build a new fire station, and we staff it with a single engine crew. We got a very, very firm idea of what that's going to cost right out of the gate. So I assume, the policy applies in both cases, right? You build a new fire station, you get a CalTarget increase for the assumed staffing level for that fire station. You build a new community center, we're going to assume a CalTarget increase based on what you say you're going to do with that pool and how much you say you're going to collect in revenue, right?
Yes, and I think you're right. There are variable O&M estimates, and bureaus deal with those cycles currently within their existing budget. So, I mean, to the extent there were savings, they'd be able to capture that. To the extent there are new needs, they might come in and ask for that money. But you'd provide that sort of base level of funding in both cases.
Yeah. I guess all I'm foreshadowing there is that we could end up front-loading big debates about O&M that are based on assumptions. And I remember the hearing where Commissioner Novick raised a principal concern about this policy, and to put it, just think about it in another context, it's sort of like he wanted to go out and buy the TV, but he didn't like the fact that there was a maintenance contract that was associated with the TV that he had to buy as well, and he didn't want to make that decision implicit in just buying the TV. So now we're saying we're going to highlight the O&M that attaches to the capital investment. But this, the one concern I have is that we've had big debates about what is the appropriate O&M. In fire, we've had commissioners in charge who would have said you want 100 firefighters at that station. So that becomes not just an O&M issue, that's a big policy question. And I'm hoping we can get just baseline O&M numbers so we don't spend a lot of time debating that in advance of the asset coming online. In other words, a reasonable way of guesstimating that doesn't front load policy debates that are not really germane to that question. And I see this as more of a sunshine issue about knowing what we're going to actually, what obligations we're taking on that impact the general fund, but not just creating an endless source of debates about what ought to be the O&M that attaches.
And I think what you're raising are those level of service questions, which are appropriate for any budget process. And that's true of new assets. It's true of existing assets. At any time, council could ask questions about the level of service in any asset, whether it should be higher or lower, and make the necessary adjustments. And I think so. I agree. I mean, we can provide sort of that estimate of what the O&M will be given certain assumptions, and then make the decision about the assets. Right. Council at any time can come back and make changes in terms of that overall level of service.
And if that's spelled out, then when we're voting on it, we can say, I'm supporting this on the assumption that the operational costs are going to be X based on the description I've heard today about what is going to be done with the facility. And if the description of what's going to be done with the facility changes, then I haven't made a commitment to fund those operational costs.
Or you get a second bite the apple, Commissioner, where in the bump or at some point you say, well, there's an extra $10,000 that was not anticipated. We can debate whether that comes out of the Bureau's budget or it comes or is a supplemental.
Right. I mean, we can always do that. I thought you were sort of addressing the question of when it's uncertain as to what the facility will really be.
Yeah.
And there, hopefully, if we have an idea of what it will be, we'll have a reasonably decent idea of what it will cost. And if it's not, I mean, if we don't really know what it will be, then we won't know what the costs are to begin with.
I agree.
The very last item I just wanted to draw attention to is Financial Policy 2.06 having to do with revenue. And again, there are a number of changes here, but specifically drawing attention to the carryover of excess revenue. And I think what we're trying to do is bring the policy in line with, I think, what the original intent was. What the existing policy says is that bureaus are allowed to carry over any excess revenue above budget. And I think the intent always was carry over any excess revenue above costs. Mm-hmm. Because, again, what we to the extent a bureau brings in excess revenue above the cost of running that program, what this says is, yes, you can go ahead and carry that over in your bureau and use it in the following fiscal year. What we didn't want to get into was an artificially low budget and then collecting additional revenue and having that carry over, because, again, that requires a general fund subsidy. So this is bringing that policy into, I think, what the intent always was of the policy, but making that really clear. But that is a change in terms of how we treated bureaus the last couple of years. So,
is there an example of during our budget that triggered this concern?
It was more as over the last couple of years we've had a couple examples in more than one bureau. Just, and again, it's nothing nefarious where they've said, oh yeah, you know, we estimated, I'm going to make this up, $100,000 of revenue, budgeted $100,000 of revenue, but collected $150,000. We'd like to carry that over. And we went back and looked, and it actually ended up costing $150,000 to run that particular program. And we've sort of questioned then, well, wait, you know, if it cost you $150,000 and you raised $150,000, that means you spent that money, but they only budgeted $100,000. And so under the old policy, the Bureau was in fact entitled to carry that over. That meant the general fund picked up, subsidized that program, which again, for these revenue generating programs is not the intent. So this is intended to say, if you're able to collect a little bit of additional revenue above your costs, that's great. We actually want to encourage that. And we incentivize that by saying you can carry that over for a different purpose the following fiscal year. Actually, the purpose is related to that program, but you can reinvest in that program the following year. But we want to make sure we're not artificially subsidizing with general funds so that bureaus can carry that over.
So if Commissioner Fritz collects more revenue because more people using community centers, under this policy, parks would still be able to carry that over and keep it within their budget?
Yeah, if it's above the cost of running those community centers, yes. It would need to go back again to the program where it was generated from, but that's what we would do anyway. So
I think this is a very impressive body of work. And is there somebody on your staff who was particularly involved in this, or have you done it all together?
Well, we worked very closely with OMF. Jeremy Patton on my staff really took lead on this, and it's been a You said a year. I think it's been three.
It's been a long time.
It's very impressive.
Yeah. So,
just on the details, I'm very happy to see that you go with shall rather than will. We had that discussion before, but so that does my heart good. I wanted to draw to the council's attention on page 6 that we're deleting the practice from the budget monitoring process that the infrastructure maintenance projects to be considered for funding with excess balance will be projects that were requested but not funded in the previous year's budget and projects that are underway but still require funding. I very much support taking that out because I believe that as things come up, we shouldn't be limited to that. And also, I think it tended to have bureaus suggest things in the budget that they didn't think were going to get funded just to be sure that they were on the list to get funded in any excess. So I appreciate that. I do have a question on page 9 under review of council actions. You're deleting the last sentence of that paragraph that says the fiscal impact statement will be available in the auditor's office website in the council filing documents section. Why is that deleted? I apologize that I did not raise that earlier.
He builds you up, not like what he's doing.
Now you put him right on the spot, yeah.
Well, I was actually trying to find that previous section that I read about the ongoing projects, and then I saw that and hadn't previously noticed it.
I think you ought to just write the auditor an apology letter, and we'll just get past this right now.
It may have just been moved, but I want to make sure that the fiscal impact statement is available to the public as well as to council.
Probably renumbered somewhere.
Reporting.
As an aside, as you're looking for it, it would be helpful to get it a little earlier than last thing on Tuesday as well.
Here you go. It's on page. It's on Exhibit A, page 14, I think. Well, maybe that's reports.
Yeah, that
actually
seems to be quite the same thing to me.
We're responsible for holding, I think, the fiscal impacts under the regulations, basically saying that we need to have copies of the fiscal impact statements available. I think is our policy, basically saying CBO is responsible for keeping the fiscal impact statements, not the auditor's office.
Yeah.
So I think it's just clarifying that role.
Yeah, we do post it on CBO's webpage now. And so I think, again, this was just deleting that requirement just because we didn't want to post it on the auditor's webpage.
Auditor's
it's on our CBO webpage.
Well, actually, I think it would be better traveling with the item because the a citizen who's looking through the agenda on Tuesday and trying to figure out what it means is not necessarily going to know that they need to go to the city budget office to look for the fiscal impact statement.
I think, you know, and I'm certainly open to that. Jeremy's pointing out, this is one of those changes I think we might have made a year or two ago. So we're trying to sort of go back.
Right.
I would say that I think where we post it probably is not appropriate to have in policy anyway. So I think actually I would argue that striking it is fine, but let's have that conversation. And actually we can add a procedure or add it to the procedures in terms of where we should post it. And again, we do have authority. The budget director does have authority to make changes to procedures, not policy.
Right.
So to the extent we can have that conversation about where you think it belongs and make sure that gets established in a procedure.
Well, perhaps when we give you the ability to make administrative rules, that could be one of them that you might not necessarily need to give to
That wouldn't be burdensome to have it on the auditor's thing and yours, would it?
No, we would want to make sure it's posted in one place and linked somewhere else.
I agree with Commissioner Fritz. There's the ease of convenient. People go to the auditor's office, no disrespect to your website. I think
I love our website. But
go to the auditor's website because they have the agenda, and to have that there just means.
I think it's currently on the auditor's website, and I don't think we actually even have it on the CBO website. It's all about the records retention, I think. I want to say it might have came from the auditor's office, just saying that they're not required under record retention rules to keep it. We're actually required to keep that, and it might have just been removing that so it doesn't look like they're required to do it.
Well, I think I agree with Director Scott that it doesn't necessarily need to be in this policy as long as it happens.
Mm-hmm. We'll follow up on where it should be and
thank you.
Make sure that happens.
Okay. Other questions for the team? Anyone sign up to speak on this resolution?
No one signed up
okay,
for any of these.
Want to speak? Then I think we might be ready for a roll call on the resolution.
827, Novick.
Thank you very much for all the hard work. And like Commissioner Fritz, I appreciate the restoration of the word shall.
I think we have a majority of the council who's thoroughly in the pro-shall camp. So that's good to know for future reference. But that aside, it's a very impressive body of work and very sensible policies. You read it through and it's like, yeah, that should work, and knowing the good work that you've done, I'm very confident that you've found every little glitch, and if not, you'll bring it back to our attention. So thank you very much. Aye.
Fish?
You know, prior to this hearing, it was my view that I will support it. After listening to this thoughtful exchange, I shall support it. Aye.
Hales?
Well, great work, and there are a lot of reasons, big and small, why we're a well-managed city. This is one more. So I appreciate the work. And then, Commissioner Fritz, as long as you continue to spend a few weeks in England every summer, I'm sure that we will all continue to enjoy our affection for the word shall. Hi. Thank you very much.